Now that the May 12th free agency deadline is come and gone, we take a look back at what kind of haul the Green Bay Packers can get in their compensatory draft picks. To do that, we welcome Nick Corte of OverTheCap.com. It's all coming up on Cheesehead TV and 24/7 Sports Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking about the offseason of the Green Bay Packers this morning, and to do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone today. We have Nick
Corte. Expert interview.
We have Nick Corte of OverTheCap.com. Nick, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Very good. We're glad you could join us because I think it's appropriate, this compensatory draft pick formula. The NFL never publishes it, so it's kind of like this weird thing, and I kind of wanted to shed some light into it. So, I mean, for our listeners to help to get to know you, is it fair to say you understand the compensatory draft pick formula maybe better than anyone employed outside the NFL?
Well, the really hard work in deciphering how the formula works was actually done by a guy who went by the name of the username on the internet of AdamJT13. And he projected the compensatory picks for, around 10 years before stopping around when the new CBA was agreed upon about 2011. My recent contribution has been more technical in nature by using both the knowledge that Adam discovered as well as the wealth of contract data that Over the Cap has to devise a program that can automatically project the comp picks. So I certainly know a lot about it, perhaps more than most, but I really owe most of that to Adam before me.
Yeah, I'm familiar with his work, and I used to look forward to his projections because it was always tough for me without knowing exactly what goes into it, how to project what the Green Bay Packers could get and things like that as someone who covers them. How did you do on your projections this past season? Did you take a look at how you did and how accurately you were able to do?
Yeah, I had about, I think it was 22 right player, right round, and then maybe about five more that were just off by a round. So, okay. Definitely have the core of it correct, you know, but you're always learning things as you go on, and it's difficult to get it exactly correct. That's something Adam never did either.
Now, to let the cat out of the bag, you have the Green Bay Packers getting a fourth round draft choice for losing Tremont Williams and a fifth rounder for losing Devon House in free agency, despite them getting paid a relatively similar amount of money. So I guess what I want to know is, can you kind of explain how you determine the cutoff between rounds, who goes where?
Yeah, that's the most difficult part of the projections, and it's one that I've yet to fully master. Adam observed that the cutoffs usually move in coordination with the salary cap, and I think that's mostly true, but in looking back at examples from some recent years, I've seen some contradictions here and there, so I suspect there may be an additional unknown factor that is used. Right now, I'm taking the midpoints of the possible ranges for each cutoff from the past 3 years for what I have data for, and then taking an average of those respectively. And then lastly, I'm applying an upward adjustment for the rise in the salary cap, which went up fairly considerably from 2014 to 15. And the cutoff I have that came out for in particular with the Packers players is about $6.6 million per year, which is kind of right in between where Tremont Williams and Devon House were signed for.
Interesting. Now, I know sometimes it's not strictly based on just salary or contract or anything like that. Well, what are the odds of these projections changing due to other factors like playing time or postseason awards that I've heard are kind of contribute to the formula? Or in other words, is there any way Devon House could possibly become like a fourth rounder in due time?
Well, he might be if the cutoff is lower than I'm projecting, and that's certainly a possibility. And playing time could factor in as well. I adjust upwards if a player's played more than about half of the snaps at his position and downwards if it's less. I looked up Devon House in this regard, and he only played about 32% of the defensive snaps last year. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's going to a much shallower depth chart in Jacksonville, so that changes things. I tested out what percentage of the defensive snaps House might need to get over the current cutoff I have, and it was 85% was the number that was spit out. That's a lot of playing time, but you never know. And as far as postseason honors go, it usually takes a first selection Pro Bowl bid to be the most common boost in that. So it seems doubtful that House would get that, would get named to that.
So, yeah, I'm... So you think in the remote possibility that he did get a Pro Bowl, it could be boosted?
Yeah, it could. I haven't figured out exactly how the Pro Bowl boost works yet because there's just not enough examples from the data I have. But it has been observed as a boosting factor.
Interesting. Again, here, admitting my naivete, or however you say that, I don't completely understand the formula, but I've heard that some players can be discounted because of their age. And I don't know if maybe this was an older rule and it's been changed, but with Tremont Williams being 32 years old, is there any way he could be disqualified just because he doesn't even qualify for this formula?
No, there's no rule regarding age. There is a rule, I call this one the Alan Faneca rule, that a player with 10 or more accrued seasons can only have a maximum value of a fifth-round pick. But in Vermont Williams' case, he has 8 accrued seasons, so that shouldn't affect him at all.
Interesting. I just heard that and never really knew exactly where that came from before or remember where I first heard about it or read about it. And another thing that I don't fully understand is the net gain or loss part of the formula. I know it's after the fact, but seeing as we're past May 12th now, but hypothetically, if the Packers signed a player for, you know, 1 year and $2 million, could that wipe out the compensation from one of the picks brought in by Tremont Williams and Devon House, even though they would have signed for a significantly higher amount of money?
Yeah, that's the way it can work sometimes, and that's also why Ted Thompson is so averse to signing unrestricted free agents that could count against the Packers in that formula. Definitely helps to explain why he aggressively pursued Julius Peppers, and that's because he was cut by the Bears instead of having his contract expire, and that's why he didn't count against them. The team that may learn this the hard way in 2016 is the Carolina Panthers. They signed some relatively low-level players, and it's currently leading to one of them canceling out a potential third-round comp pick for Greg Hardy, possibly pending his suspension, of course.
Very, very interesting. I can't imagine you wanting to cancel out a third-round draft pick. But can you also explain why you don't have the Packers getting a pick for Jamari Lattimore despite him signing with the New York Jets?
There are two reasons. The first is that there's a minimum yearly salary that's needed to even qualify for the formula in the first place. And I'm guessing that Lattimore is going to be right on the bubble in that regard. Playing time might factor into that, but that's yet to be determined. And the second one is that there's a maximum of 32 compensatory picks that can be awarded per year. And the pick for Lattimore is currently 39th in line. This rule also hurt the Packers for the 2015 comp picks when they had a potential 7th for C.J. Wilson fall below that 32-pick limit.
Very interesting. I'm learning more all the time here. And just to confirm, now that it's passed, I believe because it's passed May 12th, if the Packers were to sign a player now, like I know Brandon Spikes is still out there, and he kind of seems to be like one of the biggest names left in unrestricted free agency who still have yet to sign. So, I mean, hypothetically, if the Packers were to sign him today, tomorrow, or a month down the road, he would no longer count against the formula, correct?
Yeah, everyone seems to be ruling with that May 12th date as the day that matters right now. Brandon Spikes is an interesting example because I think the New England Patriots were also talking with them, but they're another team that has comp picks on the line, and I thought it was doubtful they were going to sign him after May 12th, so it'll be interesting to see where he goes. But the best evidence that I've seen this week so far is coming out of Detroit to confirm that May 12th date. The Lions have signed three players since then that would have counted before for the formula. And they've got some important comp picks on the line as well. The biggest of all, of course, is that they currently have a stranglehold on that top comp pick, which would be the 96th overall. Of course, we're losing Ndamukong Suh to that monster contract to the Dolphins.
Interesting. Who have they signed this week?
Corey Wooten is a name that I just saw. I can try to look up the other two. They're pretty low-level names, but those low-level names can sometimes count against you if you sign them before May 12th.
Okay. Interesting. Now, as I also understand, you're a fan and blogger of the Denver Broncos?
Yeah. Started a blog just to take over for one that had decided to call it quits after a while, but... Yeah, that's where my fandom has lied when it comes to watching the NFL. I guess Super Bowl 32 we might have a different opinion on.
Before I let you go here, just kind of one last question, maybe a little bit related. Do you think we'll be seeing a Super Bowl preview in Week 8 when the Packers travel to Denver?
Oh, I sure hope so. You know, I mean... I've got some good friends who are Packers fans too, and they'd definitely be a worthy challenger.
I think it'll be a good matchup, but Nick, thank you for joining us this morning. You've shed some light into my world as far as this compensatory draft pick formula goes, and I'm glad to hear the Packers will be getting a few picks. But thank you for joining us. Anytime I have a question about the comp pick formula from here going forward, I'm going to come to you. Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks. I'm glad I could help.
All right. Take care and have a good day, all right?
You too.
Nick Corte of OverTheCap.com joining us here at Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Glad to have him join us. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us. Very truthfully, interesting to find out how that whole comp pick formula works out. So what we're looking at, the Packers getting a fourth rounder for Tremont Williams and a fifth rounder for Devon House in next year's NFL draft. I know it's a long time away, but you know, the wheels have been put in motion already as far as how that all works out. But continuing the show here in the next segment,
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, this Friday, kind of things that have happened since the last episode of Railbird Central. Former Packers cornerback Jarrett Bush expresses during an exclusive interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and reporter Tyler Dunn that he thinks the Packers have moved on. That's kind of the sentiment expressed by Bush. Not that it's official and not that there couldn't be room for change here. And they seem to kind of leave a small window open to that possibility. But just the way Jarrett Bush was, you know, the things he was quoted as saying kind of leads you to believe the Packers have moved on. And also notable here that Jarrett Bush reveals that he had off-season surgery to repair a sports hernia. And as the story goes, Bush thought he had a groin pull for apparently 2 years before getting a second opinion and actually having surgery after the start of free agency, which I thought the timing was kind of interesting. And I don't know, maybe it was just the fact that it got so bad he couldn't, you know, really stand it any longer and had to get a second opinion, or I'm not sure as the timing of it all worked out. But, you know, free agency starts, and it's after that point that Jared Bush actually has the surgery. But I spent a fair amount of time the last episode we had of making the case for the Packers to re-sign Jared Bush. And while it certainly doesn't look, you know, very good that the Packers will, based upon Bush's comments himself, my argument for Jared Bush is only strengthened knowing that he's had off-season surgery to repair the sports hernia, something he's apparently dealt with for the past 2 years. And, you know, I kind of thought, you know, the past year or so that, you know, Jared Bush's contributions, while still, you know, big to the Packers special teams, maybe not what they were, you know, back during the, let's say, the Super Bowl years, 2010, 2011. It seemed to be the peak of Jared Bush's effectiveness as a special teams player. I suppose as a defensive player as well, when you count in that interception in Super Bowl XLV. But I mean, you know, his worth has always been as you know, pretty much the core special teamer that played, you know, on every unit, kickoff return, punt return. And so I thought, you know, maybe these past few seasons you saw a little bit of a dip as Jared Bush has got older. And there were kind of some guys like this past season, Sean Richardson and Jayrone Elliott kind of almost become the premier special teams players on the team. But now that I know that he has been dealing with an injury for 2 years and has had surgery to get it fixed, I'm almost willing to be like, wow, is it possible this was holding Jared Bush back and now he's going to be even better? Albeit he's 30 years old and going to be 31 before the start of the season. But, you know, my argument for bringing him back has only been strengthened. And you know, I think the Packers should. Like I said, there's so many. I went through them all last show in that, you know, he's a veteran. The Packers secondary is young. I think you sign to a minimum contract with no guaranteed money. You can always cut him. I think he's better than some of the other, you know, fringe guys the Packers already have on the roster. All these things taken together, I think the Packers should bring him back. And like I said, only been strengthened through the latest news we've learned since the last episode of Railbird Central. So that was kind of the biggest news of the past week or so. Regarding the Packers, but also one more item I thought was kind of interesting. This reported by Wes Hodkowitz of the Green Bay Press Gazette found out the signing bonuses of the entire Green Bay Packers undrafted free agent class. And I always think this is interesting because I always thought you could kind of glean a little bit of information on how highly the Packers value these free agents, in that, you know, the higher the signing bonus, the more they think of a player, the more, you know, they were willing to commit to him to avoid perhaps another team from getting him. You know, if the Packers are going to offer more money, it might be more than another team was willing to offer. So I always thought you could glean a little bit of information from that. Obviously, never the whole picture, and things change once, you know, once these guys get to training camp. It really doesn't matter the size of the signing bonus. But I just thought you might be able to get an idea of who the Packers think is the best players they signed. And it was really hard this season because the Packers, the highest signing bonus they gave was $5,000 to the undrafted free agents this season. And it was a tie for 9 players for the highest signing bonus. So 9 players all got that $5,000. And just to you know, very quickly, here's how it broke down. So here are the 9 players that got the $5,000 signing bonus. They are running back John Crockett, wide receiver Ricky Collins, wide receiver Jimmy Hunt, wide receiver Adrian Coxon, offensive lineman Matt Rotheram, linebacker Tavares Dantzler, linebacker James Vaughters, linebacker Jamari Erasco, cornerback Ladarius Gunter, and I believe that is the nine right there. So there's kind of your nine players who I believe the Packers kind of regarded the highest of their undrafted free agent class. Then if we go down the list here of other guys who received a signing bonus, but maybe not quite as much, I'll rank them here in order. Wide receiver Javess Blue got a $4,000 bonus, tied with offensive lineman Marcus Reed, who also got a $4,000 signing bonus. Down a level, cornerback Bernard Blake got $3,500, along with running back Alonzo Harris, also the same amount. Then down a level, wide receiver Larry Pinkard got a $3,000 signing bonus. Offensive lineman Fabian Ebele got a $2,000 signing bonus. And finally, defensive tackle LaVon Hooks did not get anything, but still the Packers signed him to a contract. So that is the entirety of the Packers free agent draft class, undrafted free agent class, with the exception of offensive lineman Andy Phillips, who was signed as a tryout player. I am assuming he too did not get any signing bonus. He was probably just happy and lucky to get a contract at all, because obviously no team, you know, signed him in the immediate aftermath of the draft. Packers were certainly willing to take a look at him, and after they did, wanted to sign him. But if he got a signing bonus, I don't know about it. Hasn't been reported. Maybe he did. So we'll keep an eye out for that if that is the case. But so there you go. There is all the signing bonuses for every single player there. Next segment on the show.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Friday, this is the official release date for the movie Pitch Perfect 2 that features five Green Bay Packers players. You almost have to be living under a rock if you haven't heard of this. Just, I mean, simply because even if you weren't a Green Bay Packers fan, I sit there and watch TV, the late night talk show circuit, and all the actors that, you know, have taken part in this movie. I was just watching the other night, Rebel Wilson was on The Daily Show. They just do this, you know, talk show circuit where they, you know they're on Fallon or they're on The Daily Show or the whatever, any late night talk show there is. But regardless, like I said, the five Green Bay Packers players taking part here: Clay Matthews, Josh Sitton, TJ Lang, David Bakhtiari, and Don Barclay, all of them offensive linemen except for Clay Matthews, a linebacker, and joined by a kind of a pseudo Packer, I guess, Jordan Rodgers, brother of Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Of course, a guest on the show here, Jordan Rodgers, he was on Railbird Central a few weeks ago, and never asked him about the movie. I don't think I knew it at the time that he was in it. Maybe had I known, I may have asked him more about it. But anyway, it's released officially in theaters on Friday here on May. What is today's the 15th? If it was, you know, there were advanced screenings on Thursday, and I'm not sure if those were just in select markets or, you know, it's kind of weird how that works out. I'm not sure if there's midnight showings or you can show a few prior to midnight. I don't know how the movie industry works, but anyway, so there was kind of news that, you know, especially in Green Bay, it was a big deal because of the Packers players. So there were several advanced screenings on Thursday that people could attend and go to, and there was coverage of it in the media and things like that. But if you're interested in that sort of thing, kind of a little bit of a chick flick, I might call it. Obviously, the very female heavy cast in this movie, to say the least, but fun that the Packers players are appearing in it nonetheless. So if you're interested in that, release date today, and you know, obviously going to be in theaters for the better part of the next month or so. But that's all I got for you for this episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us on the show. Thank you to Nick Corte of OverTheCap.com for shedding a little bit of insight into the compensatory draft pick formula for us. That is always kind of a thing you have to find out information for yourself, because the NFL is never going to tell it for you until it's time to announce the draft pick. So kind of interesting to get a little bit of a preview here. So anyway, thanks for joining us, folks. We'll be back again on Monday, live edition of the show every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time at both 247sports.com and cheeseheadtv.com. My call to action, as usual, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes. It helps us get the word out about the show. It is completely free of charge, no paywall, no subscription. The one small thing we ask, if you haven't done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes. But hey, that'll do it, folks. Have a good weekend, everybody. I leave you today with a song called Colorado Bluebird Sky by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go Pack Go. Sky.